WF giving you the news. More comprehension expected. To those who say protests and demonstrations are not permitted in the Soviet Union, one should be aware of the news today that literally 2,000 demonstrators marched through Tbilisi, capital of Soviet Georgia, where Joseph Stalin was born. They marched through this Friday morning in protest against plans to drop Georgian as the Republic's official language. These reports were confirmed by Moscow. Naturally, nationalistic feelings still exist within the Soviet Union. It was a peaceful demonstration, and the Supreme Soviet took their protest with kindness and consideration, no police to harass them, and Moscow radio said, and TASS news agencies, that strong consideration would be given to their appeal to keep Georgian language as the official language of the Republic of Georgia in the Soviet Union. However, don't miscalculate that the Republic of Georgia would be in any way disloyal to the USSR, the Soviet Union, the vanguard of Marxist-Leninism. Volunteer Army, a bad scene. New York. PSC Paul Dahm and David Bekovitz, both 20, and natives of Medina, Ohio, joined the Army in 1976 under the buddy system to learn a skill, heavy machine operators, and gain job experience for the future. When the promised work never materialized by the U.S. Army, and after exhausting the available grievance machinery, first Bekovitz and then Dahm, who ended up as a grease monkey in the motor pool, went AWOL, absent without leave from their armed units in Germany. At a January 18 press conference called by Citizen Soldier, the Servicemen Members' Rights Group, Dahm announced the intention to surrender to authorities at Fort Brooks. They left an army unit in no way was involved in military operation. They announced their intention to surrender at Fort Dix, New Jersey. Bekovitz had already left the service with Citizen Soldier's help, albeit with a bad discharge, meaning loss of citizenship, rights to vote, and other options. Their initial time of enlistment, now reportedly over 40%. A good sign in terms of resistance to the military expansionist ambitions of U.S. monopoly neo-fascism or monopoly capitalism. The Army seems reluctant to fight U.S. imperialist wars. This, of course, is negative in one sense, that it caused more and more dependency upon nuclear weapons and weapons of mass destruction, like the neutron bomb. Today, a scientist stepped forward in the USA, stating that the neutron bomb had been effected not to control the Soviets, but to control black people and Indians, Puerto Ricans, Chicanos in their ghettos. Convenient bomb. It fits into that which we have thought earlier. The bomb can be dropped in the ghetto. Its range of accuracy can be exactly predicted to within a few yards. Thus, they could calculate exactly how large a black neighborhood is in any U.S. city. Drop the neutron bomb. No property would be damaged. All the people would be killed. The rats, all the rodents, and everything else, according to this scientist, Dr. J. L. Chesley. Horrifying news, but not surprising. Our guest is coming down the lane now. You appear to be ready to receive him. This eminent scientist, who has worked along with Dr. Papp and heads the medical net of 800, one of the coordinators of that remarkable net that has been a great assistance to us. With your best courtesy and your best appearance, pick up everything around you. Our whole inspection committee, education department, and nursing staff are entirely responsible. We must make our project as presentable as possible. Anyway, in finishing the news about Dom, by the way, the news has just come in that over 60 people have fallen from the steel kind of girder that's used for construction work by one of the biggest construction firms in the USA. It was built improperly and collapsed, throwing 60 people to their deaths in the streets below. Capitalism always builds things for profit. We will not discuss politics with our guests, except people like Yvette's mom, who is a real beautiful woman. We've enjoyed her so much. And we know that she, realizing the danger to our lives, would not dare discuss all of our ideals, as beautiful and peaceful as they are. Brotherhood, sisterhood, because there are forces, mercenary forces back there, who would gladly try to kill us. So to those who are not, given a special exception, like Mrs. Mulgrave, who is a beautiful woman, we will not discuss our politics, our beliefs, our ideology of black liberation. We will just be human beings, kindly, friendly, and warm to those that come. Anyway, Dom, according to Dom, his own experience shows that the army is a very bad scene. Guys have gone on drugs. Nobody gives a shit, he said. I had to get out. You're raped by officers. So hypocritical. Homosexuality is being condemned in all U.S. cities. And laws passed to discriminate against homosexuals. And we should be concerned about that as much as we are. Discrimination against blacks. Discrimination against one minority can lead to discrimination against another. And the cities in the USA that are reversing their laws of discrimination have reached a frightening degree. St. Paul, Minnesota, yesterday being the last one to now make it legal to discriminate against minorities such as homosexuals. Anyway, he told Ensign, Todd Ensign, the representative of the soldier, said that Americans are enlisting because they are desperate. The army lures them with job training they can't get in civilian society, and then frees them up in meaningless labor, selfless labor, that often ends in deaths and disabilities, crippling disorders that are never reported in the news. He said that absenteeism, depression, and bad discharges are higher than they were during the Vietnam War. These guys are climbing through the transom, Ensign said. Dom, D-H-A-M, is now last week's announcement by Minister Abdul Alim Farrakhan concerning his break with the Muslim group known as the World Community of Islam in the West, WCIW, brought mixed emotions and provoking reactions from throughout the black community. The announcement ended months of widespread rumors, gross speculation, and official silence concerning a widening rift within the ranks of WCIW, formerly known as the Black Nation of Islam. Wallace D. Muhammad, assuming the title of Chief Minister, headed the group since the reported death of his father, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, on February 25, 1975, sponsored by the Associated Students of Southern California, the noted Islamic scholar, orator, and national spokesman addressed a capacity audience at the University of Southern California's Hancock Auditorium. A tense silence fell over the auditorium as Farah Khan, who is married to Wallace D. Muhammad's sister, said he was returning to the separatist doctrine espoused by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Since February 26, 1975, Farah Khan, as most of the leadership within the Nation of Islam, rallied around Wallace in an apparent show of solidarity. Farah Khan traveled around the globe and served as national spokesperson for the group. In explaining his transfer of allegiance to Wallace, he said, "Having been taught that unity was the key, I sought to preserve that unity between the Muslims of the Nation of Islam." Admitting he went to sleep, he said he would not attempt to justify his actions through the scriptures. He apparently referred to the many instances in which he was likened to Aaron, the biblical spokesman for Moses. "I fell asleep," humbly. "I now thank God that he has brought me out of my sleep, and now I am back on my post." The magnetic personality of Farah Khan appeared to hold the audience spellbound as he launched into the main topic of his speech. "This is a very serious time, brothers and sisters," he warned. "This message I am going to deliver today will burn into your brain. It makes no difference what you think of me." He said, "God sent the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to the black man in America as a warner. God sent messages beneath the feet and not towards the lofty. God sends his warning to the ranks of the lowly, the humble, and the enslaved," he said. "Many turn their backs on the source from which it came. Therefore they turn their hearts from the source also." Announcing his subject as coming from both the Holy Quran and the Bible, he discussed the disastrous state of biblical cities where mighty empires built upon class systems, slavery, and any conceivable form of wickedness abounded. In each case, God sent messengers warning of the calamity to come, he continued. "In each case, he called the calamity a lie, and the warner a lie. Each city," he reminded the assembly, "was destroyed by violent winds, earthquakes, floods, or fire." We give this commentary to the Jonestown community just as a way of comparative religion, not subscribing to the Muslim view, nor certainly do we subscribe to the Muslim Muhammad, the community of Islam. Narrowing the subject to the contemporary situation, Farah Khan and blacks in America to Israelites being held in bondage by Pharaoh for more than 400 years didn't want to be separated. Slaves wanted more to do with the master. He did not want to leave them as wicked himself. Therefore they deemed the warner a liar. He reminded the audience that God used Pharaoh's disobedience to bring about his eventual doom, referring once again to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as God's warner to black. He said he wanted us as civilized beings, and he knew we were savage, with no knowledge of self, degenerate, unholy, ungodly, and thieves in peace and time. We have been pilgrims for self-destruction, and we sought unity with cleanliness. He likened the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the biblical Moses, who eventually led the Israelites out of Egypt and into their own land. Farah Khan said blacks were first brought into this country in the year 1555 by the infamous slave trader John Hawkins on the good ship Jesus that was originated by King James of England, the King of England, who wrote the Christian Bible. Whites immediately made Christianity and servitude synonymous, he said. Commentary on word of religion, because this is a nation of Islam, Islami, and Christianity. In no way is it supportive of the views of the nation of Islam, nor the world community of Islam. Over, far from the audience, that the advanced technology of white America and the wrong instances of blacks and both blacks have become wanted and face genocide. He cited the rise of Klan activities, the neo-Nazi movement, the white citizen groups, the Marquis Kane, and the many social integration demonstrations in every across the country as only minor examples of anti-black, anti-brown sentiment. Liking a more ominous note, he compared black singing "My Country, Tis of Thee" to the millions of Jews who sang when they marched to the gas chambers. Farrakhan said next to marching to death, he said information coming to him from reliable sources revealed that thousands of persons who thought they were getting polio shots were given a vaccine, SV40, which actually was a cancer-causing shot. He said official protest to President Carter only resulted in a telegram which admitted a mistake. He offered it to the press corps for their review, that in fact, blacks had been given a cancer-causing inducing drug called SV40. He vowed, even at the cost of his life, said Farrakhan, to restore the nation of Islam. He said temples would be set up, the universities of Islam reopened, and the continued perpetuation of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad would once again be proclaimed. Following the lecture, a question and answer session was held in the reception hall. Farrakhan was questioned as how he could pledge his allegiance and his life to God and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, switch allegiance, and now once again sound like the old Farrakhan. He merely repeated his earlier statement, "As I said before, brother, I just went to sleep like Jonah in the whale." He acknowledged, however, that he was walking in Malcolm X's shoes. Due to his trip with WCIW, Wallace B. Muhammad, Farrakhan said he hoped to avoid the fate which befell Malcolm when he broke with the Nation of Islam. Reportedly, the split between Malcolm and the Nation of Islam came as a result of Malcolm being suspended because of remarks he made concerning the assassination, the cruel murder of President John F. Kennedy. Following Malcolm's defection from the Nation of Islam, Farrakhan was one of the most outspoken critics of Malcolm. He referred to him as a hypocrite and a slanderer. Malcolm was later assassinated during a lecture at one of Harlem's ballrooms, where the church held one of its conventions. Four persons were convicted of the murder, two were reported to be Muslims, and two agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Rising swiftly from the post of minister at Boston Temple No. 11, Farrakhan bore the title of national spokesperson, Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He traveled extensively throughout the country for more than a decade, teaching the doctrine of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. As a minister of Harlem's Temple No. 7, he transformed the dope and vice-ridden area of 116th Street and Lenox Avenue into an oasis of hope and dignity. Again, I remind you, this is broadcast news commentary on comparative religion. In no way do we subscribe to Farrakhan's concept of separatist Islam, nor do we in any way give support to Wallace B. Muhammad's concept of Islam and religious projectionism. Muslim businesses flourished within the area of Farrakhan's ministry, and it employed more than 4,000 Muslims, non-Muslims, dope addicts, prostitutes, and husbands of the description looked upon the change with pride and hope. Thousands of street persons quickly became converts and took on renewed styles. Despite the eloquent manner in which his speech was delivered, the air of humbleness that characterized his demeanor, and the expressions for forgiveness from God, many of the students appeared to have been in a quandary. Immediately following the dismissal, small groups of students gathered around the auditorium, presenting aspects which still remain unanswered in Farrakhan's speech. "What did he mean by going to sleep?" inquired one student. "How could he follow Wallace when he knew that Wallace's history showed him to be opposed to the teachings of his father?" another pondered. "How can one be sure that he will not do the flip-flop again as Eldridge Cleaver?" "I believe he is for real," quipped one cynical-sounding student. "But the white man's going to have a field day with Muslims killing off each other." Despite his announcement, which put to rest much speculation, Farrakhan's stand at this point appeared to be more controversial than ever before. Having been taught that unity was the key, he said, as the summation of his keynote speech, "I sought to preserve that unity between the Muslims. I fell asleep. I compromised." As Abdul Azim Farrakhan breaks with Wallace Muhammad's group and establishes the original nation of Islam once again in the United States. Thus ends the commentary the afternoon on comparative religion. In no way do we subscribe in any way to Farrakhan's position, nor the Muslim position, nor indeed the world community of Islam under Wallace v. Muhammad. This is a nation, Guyana, of three major religions: Islam, Hindustani, and Christianity. Well, it is good for community information that you have information about all perspectives. Thank you. Friday afternoon news. Larry Flynn, Hustler magazine owner, publisher also of Plainfield, Georgia Gazette, the newspaper in President Carter's home city, after having printed revelations of CIA involvement and all interest involvement in the assassination of President Kennedy in his Free Press, Los Angeles, before it closed, was shot down by an attempted assassin's bullet. No, 35, not transferred from a hospital in Atlanta, Georgia, to one near his home in Columbus, Ohio. It was shot and permanently paralyzed and hit down by a sniper. He was broke in his obscenity trial. Keeping the hotline humming, the hotline between Tel Aviv and Cairo, a telex that was installed soon after Egyptian President Anwar's visit to Jerusalem in November, the news at least just prior to Israel's invasion of Lebanon, officials to the Defense Ministry sent a message to Egyptian Defense Minister Mohamed Abdel Ghani El Ghassmi, informing him of the operation's limited goal in the hope of preventing any harsh Egyptian reaction that could have triggered world contemplation and possible nuclear holocaust. Later, the line was used to arrange Israeli Defense Minister Yisrael Rabin's abortive meeting with Sadat of Egypt. Nixon's non-secret. Newsweek magazine has it that Richard M. Nixon recently submitted 50 pages of his forthcoming memoirs to the White House for a communication review of passages dealing with international affairs. Carter's foreign policy advisors found the material far from explosive. In fact, nothing was sensitive enough to require even blue penciling, and so the National Security Council authorized the clearance. The whole book, but of only those pages it reviewed. The former president, Nixon, who signed for impeachment, voluntarily the pages east as a matter of courtesy, and those who saw the small portion of the massive manuscript were surprised at what it did not include. In the passages are pages Nixon submitted, he hardly touched on the Soviet detente, the Middle East, or even China. Instead, he dwelt almost entirely on the Vietnamese War. Nixon quoted at length from cables sent him by Henry Kissinger, who might have wished to save such material from his own book, in that everyone these days, according to Newsweek magazine, may be making profit at the national security expense of the United States. Thunder on the Right. Newsweek again has it that Massachusetts Democrats, a conspicuously liberal lot, may get an unexpected candidate. Howard Phillips, head of the conservative caucus, is seriously thinking about entering the party primary in September for the nomination to oppose the lone black senator of the United States, Senator Edward Brooke, who is a solid favorite to as a Republican candidate. Senator Edward Brooke recently made commentary that he was interested in supporting the Panamanian Canal Treaty. He was only interested in his own personal problems of re-election. Despite his previous jobs in the Nixon administration, Philip, the right wing, has remained a registered Democrat in his home state. He is remembered for the dismantling of the Office of Economic Opportunity, the OEO, at Nixon's request, and he would probably use his opposition to the Panama Canal Treaty as his chief main issue. So far, Phillips' potential opponents in the primary include a woman gay rights leader and a liberal state legislator. For the UAW, the mighty United Auto Worker Union faces a delicate calculation over organizing the new Volkswagen plant in Westmoreland County, Pennsylvania. The company hopes to be operating at capacity by the fall, with 4,000 to 4,500 workers turning out 200,000 rabbits a year. Last week, when the first car came off the line, there were only 12 workers on the job. Under the National Labor Relations Board guidelines, the UAW could seek representation rights when the plant approaches its full complement. And as of now, skilled workers at the plant are getting $2 an hour less than their counterpart at General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler. But many of them were out of work when the West German automaker hired them. And when such worker confides, they're so relieved to have jobs again that maybe they won't want to risk a strike. Many people are scab workers in U.S. economy and economies of the price system these days, because there is just enough jobs available. Inquisitive Agnew, according to the Periscope of Newsweek U.S. magazine, is branching out again. The television networks are being offered an hour-long tape of a disgraced former president conducting a wide-ranging interview with King Hussein of Jordan. Agnew is currently employed as a representative of several American firms that do business with Arab countries. The interview was produced by Nine Network of Australia and is being held in the United States by Transworld International, a film division of Agent McCormick National Management Group. Detente, that means peace and coexistence, Chinese style. While U.S. Soviet peace detente seems to be clean, U.S. relations with China, according to Newsweek, are warming up. Chinese embassy officials in Mali, Syria, Turkey, Yugoslavia have displayed increased friendliness towards USA diplomats in recent weeks, while officials in Beijing, capital of the People's Republic of China, have agreed to provide more space for the U.S. liaison there. They confirmed that they expect a large influx of American tourists this year. It is reported in the news, by the way, that there are border clashes, according to BBC, on the northeast borders of China between the USSR and China. Investigations are being conducted in the Himalayan mountains to conclude to what degree of residue of radiation, plutonium-90 and other byproducts of nuclear fission have leaked out into the snow and thus being drained into the Ganges, which in some way or another is utilized by two-thirds of the Indian population that is growing nearly 1 billion. Australia makes demands upon the USA to do something about Vietnamese refugees, but they have refused to take any more in the nation. It is reported by BBC that Australia turned away several hundred Vietnamese in crafts that most certainly, if they go back to sea, will lead to their death. Bert Lance on the attack. Bert Lance, chief advisor to President Biden, who has gone through considerable harassment of late, legal harassment, for a gathering of the American Society of Newspaper Editors in Washington this week, and thanked them for their courage in inviting him to set the record straight. He then offered an extended critique of the press, citing careless, erroneous, or biased reporting of his financial affairs while he was President Carter's budget director and chief advisor, and resigned last fall. Lance charged that several publications have created a perversive, lying impression that I am a huge operator.